Welcome to this week's anime podcast. This week we'll be discussing kind of a broad genre of science fiction, how it may have changed over the last 100 years or so, I suppose, in its views of the future, and also in general, does it present a kind of a left-wing, right-wing, nihilistic view today, I suppose. And with us this week, we have James and Dan. They're each going, respectively, under Jitsi handles. James is going under the Jitsi handle RoboQueef. How are you doing, James?
Queef with me, or there will be trouble.
Very good. I'll buy that for a dollar. And we also have Dan, who's going under the rather inventive Jitsi handle Starship Poopers. How you doing, Dan?
I'm good. I'm doing my part.
Still high on tramadol a week later?
Yes.
I'm imagining it's another substance. And my Jitsi handle is Joss Whedon Touch My Firefly, which if anyone, well, you almost know about Mr. Whedon and his propensity to touch and yell. So what we're going to do is we're going to try not to make this a argument between James and myself about Blade Runner 2049, or indeed any of the Denis Villeneuve canon, or in just in general, a kind of subjective discussion of kind of modern or semi-recent science fiction films. We'll start with something, I suppose, very, very basic. Does anyone remember, or does each of you remember the first kind of science fiction movie, book, comic book that you read, watched, whatever, listened to, that really kind of hit home and had an impact on you?
It's actually, for me, it is Blade Runner. Now, my relationship with Blade Runner is quite complicated, and I go back and forth about how good of a film it is. But it is the film that basically got me through quite a lot of college and university by endlessly talking about it and discussing it, rearranging it, etc., etc. So I think, you know, as someone that used to, anyway, until the pandemic, but will do again at some point, you know, gets paid to discuss film. When you're 12 or 13, something like Blade Runner is a very good introduction to what film can actually be. It can be entertaining, but also deep and thoughtful and, you know, have lots of layers to it. So for me, it's definitely Blade Runner.
I think probably my first introduction to sci-fi might have been through computer games, and specifically Elite, a game called Starglider, where you kind of dumped into an open universe and left to it, and you kind of pick up bits of story along the way. But in terms of film, probably the first sci-fi film I remember watching was probably RoboCop, but I think I was a bit too young to understand the satire. Terminator 2, I think, was probably the first one that kind of gave me thoughts towards sort of made me think deeper about the sort of subtext kind of an artificial intelligence being like, what's the line between an artificial intelligence and a real sort of intelligence? So I guess Terminator 2 would probably be the first one that kind of really engaged me in that way.
Well, for me, my dad was a huge science fiction nerd, and so he was always watching Star Trek, he was always watching Doctor Who, he was always watching stuff like that. When it came on, he'd been the perfect age for the original Star Trek in the mid-60s. Like, he was a kid at the time, and he was obsessed with that, still was when I was born. I suppose for me, the first science fiction that I actually clung on to that maybe he didn't really get was Dune by Frank Herbert. I read the books, and then I watched the movie, which was very disappointing. But then around 2001, there was a TV show version of the first book of Dune, which was done, I think, by Sci-Fi Channel, and that was great. And I still think Dune is an amazing kind of science fiction fantasy, really, to some extent, but some really interesting ideas in there. And later on, when I was a teenager, I was into his Dark Materials. Anyway, we could be here all day if we were to talk about different types of fantasy and sci-fi. I suppose at its best, science fiction presents a view of the future, not always necessarily a rosy one, but of the fiction, of the science fiction that you watched that was, I suppose, not maybe not utopian, but optimistic about there being a human future in a more advanced age. Could you maybe describe what that was? Again, maybe not the first one you remember, but I suppose the best description of one you remember. And maybe also then answer, if you can, why did that change? Because I think a lot of the science fiction depictions of the future now are not very hopeful.
Well, I mean, if you want to go back into the basic histories of science fiction, and you know, to say that science fiction has always been hopeful is obviously not true, but it definitely had that vein in it. It was used as a literary genre in the 1800s, late 1800s anyway, as a way to discuss society at the time, which is what sci-fi's always really been. But at the same time, it did also, like, you know, like, we can actually achieve things. We can change the world that is around us. And, you know, you have to remember the time this is coming out of, in the late 1800s, the Industrial Revolution. Lots of people say that I'm inclined to agree with this, is that the first sci-fi novel is Frankenstein. Now, obviously, it's not very, you know, it's a horror novel as well, and it's not got a lot of great things to say about, you know, science fiction, but it has that hope of science in it, though. And that's kind of what one of its central tenets is that, like, here's someone that's able to bring this disparate piece of meat back together and sort of animate it as a human. And obviously in the novel, he's able to speak. He's a sort of, you know, it's like there's a reason that it's got the subtitle Prometheus in it. And it's got this, you know, this real sort of like sense of that, you know, this creature can learn to read, can be very well educated. So even within that horror, it's got a future in it. And people like Jules Verne are sort of seeing this idea of, like, you know, what technology can liberate us from the present, the things that we have to deal with now. You know, think about when something like Frankenstein was written, which was, or when it was, at least when it was conceived, was like the year without summer, when a huge volcano erupted and basically blotted out the sun. Huge crop failures everywhere. Now, we would like to think now that that wouldn't happen. If there was crop failures, you know, we've got tins of beans around to fucking last for however long, you've got Twinkies, et cetera, et cetera. There's probably enough calories in most people's households. I know this is, you know, this would be a point of contention because obviously food banks, et cetera, but within, at least with the middle class, there's enough probably calories in your household now to sustain you for a winter or a summer, which would be almost unthinkable 100, 200 years ago, even for the rich, because we've got refrigerators and tinned food and things like that. And so there is this real sense, like, of science fiction going in through the 20s and the 30s and 40s, even though horrible things are happening, there's this idea that technology and science can liberate us. And it definitely feels now, since I would say from the 90s onwards, as Mark Fisher would call it, capitalist realism is sort of set in, that science fiction now, all it does is effectively reinforce capitalism, because now people are unable to imagine a better future for themselves. They cannot conceive that technology would make things better. So science fiction exclusively now comes in the form of dystopian futures.
Yeah, I know, I agree. I think the, whether it be kind of the Russians exemplified by Asimov, or whether it be even Jules Verne, I suppose there was always a vein of, Jules Verne did do kind of some negative aspects of it as well, but there was always this vein of technology is an improving kind of, with technological advances, society will improve. I think it comes out of the kind of the Enlightenment afterglow, the kind of the 18th and early 19th century, that this perception that you can make society and people better, and therefore, given enough time, society will reach utopia, which itself some historians have said is just a reflection on the origins of the Enlightenment in Christianity. But I do think when you get, because some people have said you can start seeing beginnings of the type of dystopian science fiction in, what's it called, Night of the Living Dead, you can debate whether that's horror or science fiction, or certainly you have the beginnings of kind of a view of what would society be, with basically what we have now, but in the future. Again, the Dune is like that. Dune is not a utopia, though it presents a rather disturbing like a utopia when in the third book, which is the God Emperor of Dune, where the main character becomes a giant sandworm and rules the universe in an authoritarian fashion, rather peaceful fashion, but authoritarian nonetheless. But all these things are there, but I do think in terms of pop representations of sci-fi now, they're either dystopian or wholly having philosophical discussions about human nature. So like the best example I can think of a modern sci-fi that's done that is probably The Children of Men. Children of Men came out, I think it was 2006, and even Zizek loved it, so that's something. But it certainly presented a world where no children were being born, hadn't for 20 years, and showed the collapse of society, really, from the inside. A lot of the things it described was only kind of a couple of steps beyond where we are now. So I think maybe what happened there was the afterglow of the Enlightenment, kind of that sense that the society was improving, began to wane, if not disappear. And what we're left with now in a kind of post-religion world is kind of fairly nihilistic view of where what humans are and therefore where humans are going. So I suppose that's obvious that it would be reflected in the literature. Dan, what do you think? What utopias do you remember being described, and why has it gone bad?
I think if you look at sort of the peak of sort of utopian, to me it seems to be sort of post-war. So post-war up until sort of the late 60s. And as was mentioned, science fiction is a reflection of the society in which it's written, as well as sort of projecting into the future. So I think when you look at the end of the 60s, like the Vietnam War, the kind of collapse of counterculture and the whole like hippie idealism, that seemed to kind of coincide with a more bleak view of the future. And then when you move sort of towards the 1980s with the onset of neoliberalism and all that sort of thing, it's almost like we've lost the capacity to imagine things getting better, or imagine sort of technology improving our lives vastly beyond where we are now, partly from sort of, I guess, the idea of the loss of collectivization, or sort of the atomization of society has kind of pushed us away from these sort of utopian ideals. The cynical, not necessarily cynical, but the negative sides have always been there in sci-fi. I mean, you look at Brave New World, where Huxley talks about sort of it's the things that we love that are used to control us. So it's not necessarily that it's never been there, but I think now it's more prevalent because as a society, we're less able to sort of visualize a future that's positive in a sense.
Like sci-fi came in a couple of guises, and there was like genuine like, oh, things will be better, here's some hopeful stuff. There was the cautionary tale, and then there was a sort of the neutral, which say, you know, the sort of the stuff that Asimov does is kind of neutral. It's like, you know, there's problems here, society's overall sort of function, and now it's like exclusively, you know, a shit show. So even something like Star Trek, which in the 60s started off as a, you know, the sort of like post-racial idea of what the future could be without, you know, having to worry about having food or energy or anything like that, wherein, you know, I haven't seen it, but everyone says that Picard is basically like a dystopian. And, you know, within Picard, they've got a migrant crisis. And this works counterintuitive to the first series, where it's basically like, oh yeah, we don't even see race now. You don't have to worry about race when there's space aliens that are all green and, you know, blue and things like that.
I think Red Letter Media do quite a good dissection of Picard and how bad it is as Star Trek. But I think it's there are still elements of optimism. If you've seen Interstellar, it's sort of like climate has collapsed and the Earth's kind of fucked. But there's this thread of optimism that runs through the whole film where, I mean, basically they're getting off world. It's one last gasp attempt to try and find sort of a second Earth. And that film's quite optimistic. I think if you look in sort of late 90s, Contact, which I think it's a fantastic film, but that is, I mean, it was written by Carl Sagan, so that is just pure optimism, that film, in terms of how contact with an extraterrestrial species would have a deeply profound effect on humanity. So it's still, there are elements there of that vein of optimistic sci-fi, but it does seem to be a lot less prevalent than it was.
I think you could also throw in Arrival and even Sunshine, though that has a bad last third of the movie. But it is optimistic in the end, obviously, in terms of what happens at the end of Sunshine. Yeah, I mean, without having a kind of giant argument about Blade Runner 1 and 2, which I kind of do want to have, really, about what it... well, at least one of them anyway says about kind of modern conceptions of where we're going. There are, before we go into that kind of negative side, we should probably try and be a bit more optimistic. One of the greatest sci-fi writers, in my opinion anyway, was Ursula Le Guin, who passed away, I think, a year or two ago. And she certainly, in a lot of her work, whether it be the Earthsea trilogy, series of books, whether it be the Dispossessed, which is one of the best. If you're listening to this and you want to hear a book about anarchism and space, buy that book. It's a great book. And science fiction has influenced anarchism and socialism and even Star Trek in you know, they never say it explicitly, but it's effectively a kind of a utopian communist society in The Next Generation. You know, and there that vein is there, basically in a post scarcity world, in a world where, you know, we can just create whatever we want through your molecules and these replicators. You don't need to have competition for anything, really. There's in a world in a universe where you can colonize and terraform planets, there's never going to be a fight over property, you know, and therefore for class as well. So I mean, it's there. All, like we were talking in the last episode, technology in many ways isn't really the issue with kind of our critique of society. It's the class structures that are going to, we think anyway, perpetuate inequality. So I do think that all these writers have seeded these ideas there. I think Ursula probably did a good job because this Possessed is about anarchists being kicked off the home world and basically being driven to this desolate planet moon, which they were able to colonize and terraform, but you know they weren't able to coexist with the capitalists and coexist with the Stalinists that were on the home world. Anyway, I'm kind of blabbing on. Do you guys think that there is something in science fiction that has or can say something to socialists and say something to anarchists? So what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a complicated genre in a lot of ways because let's take, you know, something like fantasy, and we're talking fantasy in as a genre basically invented by J.R.R. Tolkien for better and basically for worse. Pretty much has like its singular vein, and there hasn't been much, say, like high literature to come out with it. Now we can discuss another time, what does high literature mean? Is it important? Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, sci-fi is a very malleable genre where there does seem to be this inherent political nature to it, partly because of its DNA. And it's, you know, like a lot of left-wing authors have used it to discuss things, and a lot of right-wing authors have used it to discuss things. A perfect example would be something like Starship Troopers, the book, which is basically a fascist like wank fest. But then the film is used by Paul Verhoeven to basically be a pastiche of fascism. So, you know, it is, again, like technology itself, it's sort of like a morally neutral form. But yeah, it's definitely got this great ability to discuss things, because again, it's mostly talking about now, but through a cipher that is very handy and gives you like plausible deniability, etc., etc. And let's not forget that one of the worst books of all time, and touted as by every centrist melt as a cautionary tale, 1984, is a science fiction novel. You know, it's basically, in reality, what it is an MI5 op to to attack the Stalinist regime without really getting down to the nuts and bolts of what was actually terrible about Stalinism in the USSR. And it's now basically a world that we live in, but without any of the sort of like enjoyable parts of it. And yeah, like, I think one as well is the other thing that it has is that basically everyone in Silicon Valley of note is a massive sci-fi nerd. And unfortunately, they all seem to have fallen into the Ayn Rand versions of sci-fi rather than sort of understanding where someone like Philip K. Dick was coming from. Now, again, a very complicated character, but is a basically, you know, a pro-leftist or at least pro-humanist writer, or someone like, I've forgotten his name off the top of my head, but you know, the guy that wrote 2001, it was basically a socialist, and you know, books like that and those genres basically give us ideas that we can build upon, because it is saying like, look, here's what you can do. Like, you can imagine a world beyond. Or when it comes to someone like, again, I've forgotten his name, but The Time Machine, you know, it's like a cautionary tale of what's going to happen when it comes to the future and how things are going to diverge. And it works as a template of what to do and what not to do. And those things are important, because it is sort of weird when you look at literature for up in, you know, before then, there isn't a lot of stuff looking forward. There's a lot of stuff talking about the past. There's a lot of stuff like aping Greek mythology or looking at, you know, sort of talking about the present. There isn't a whole amount of stuff saying like, where are we going to go? And so that's why it's got this like ability to be a really interesting and really important part of the human psyche. But, you know, as we're discussing, it's effectively now used as a blocker to stop you thinking about what the possibilities are.
Not to give him press, but I always felt that, and I'm sure other people that did it before him, but the kind of the Firefly series with the idea that there would be kind of a home world kind of central government version versus kind of outer worlds, which were kind of independent or libertarian. I always kind of liked that idea. Not that I can necessarily think we're going to get off world, but I always thought that idea was, had something to say, just maybe not necessarily the best person to say it. Dan, what about yourself? Do you think, or can you think of any science fiction that influenced socialism or socialist ideas?
It's sort of what James has mentioned, really. I think he's covered that quite well. It is a good genre for speculating. It makes for a good canvas to kind of throw ideas on. And because I think the sci-fi, it's got quite a broad scope, because when you're talking about a sci-fi novel, you're talking about possibly an individual, but you have to kind of reflect that individual's experience of the society, and with that you can use that to kind of throw ideas into the mix that speculative, but kind of, you know, can be quite interesting. In terms of, I'm trying to think of any
Well, how about this, Dan, since you're having trouble with that, how about science fiction that has painted the opposite picture, like The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged? Or I remember a book I read when I was in university, which is called Salt, which is presents a world that's terraformed and has two societies, one a kind of capitalist around this lake in one part of the planet, the other an anarchist one, and they basically eventually come to war between each other. But can you think of science fiction that actually presents a world or future or innate or kind of examples of human nature, which has actually disempowered people? You know, do you think, I mean, it's probably a lot of examples, but can you think of how science fiction might have actually made people more nihilistic?
Well, I think when you're on about Ayn Rand, I've never read her because I've tried and I just found it so fucking turgid. But I have read Starship Troopers, and that's quite good because it's kind of a vision of a future that presents itself as being quite plausible, and it tries to present itself as reasonable. But when you look at the core conceit of it, it's quite unreasonable in that only military service can give you the vote. Only military service can kind of make you a citizen. So in some respects, it's sort of like it is a fascist ideal. And I think it's quite good in that it kind of explores the concept of almost like a future perpetual war within a system like that. And it's quite a bleak book, really. And the film really did quite a good... I think if you view the film as sort of like a propaganda film from that book's universe, sort of like a film version of The Triumph of the Will, it actually works really well at kind of showing you what the book is about as well.
I think, I mean, just to throw my lot in there, I think this is probably a good time to talk about Blade Runner, since James knows a huge amount about it. I just watched the movie this morning. Well, the sequel, in quotation marks. I do think pieces like Blade Runner or Carbon, what's it called? Altered Carbon, which was a book series originally, apparently, do present a world where, much like we were talking in the last episode, the super wealthy have drawn so far ahead of the rest of the population, they're effectively immortal and are able to hold on to their wealth and power for thousands of years through basically jumping from cloned body to cloned body. And I think a lot of people I've met and talked to, including Will, who used to appear in this podcast, have always found that more believable. Now, I've always felt that maybe it's a self-fulfilling kind of prophecy, that how much of that type of dystopian or whatever you want to call Blade Runner or Altered Carbon, that may well have the effect of inhibiting people's desire for a more positive future, because again, it reinforces the negative aspects of human nature. James, what do you think about that? Do you think those types of movies and books and media can be negative in terms of how we try and build a different or better future?
Yeah, I mean, cyberpunk's a very weird subgenre of sci-fi, and it's worth sort of going into it as a genre a little bit, because it sort of came about in the 80s, or it did come about in the 80s, just not two ways about that, mostly based on the works of Philip K. Dick to a large extent. And Blade Runner was the film that basically, you know, there was a couple of things that were cyberpunk beforehand, but it was the thing that really pushed it forward. And all cyberpunk, at least, was. We don't have enough time to get into what's happened to the genre these days, but it was always political, and it was always against corporatism, and that's sort of where the punk thing comes in, because they're always outsiders of society that are fighting against society. And no matter what you think about William Gibson's work, it's not something that, you know, something like Neuromancer, I don't think has aged well. I might have felt differently about it if I'd read it in 1984 when it came out. But, you know, the DNA in it is very much coming out of the punk, but not the punk aesthetic of the 80s, like genuine, like a lot of, you know, anarchist punk political theory were there and engaging in and, you know, enjoying cyberpunk as a genre. But basically in the early 90s, sci-fi was sort of, you know, sci-fi authors, like, you know, in quotation marks, serious sci-fi authors were deriding it because it cyberpunk was more spending more time on the politics than it would be spending about how does the actual technology work. And so they basically were siphoned off into their own little side world. And then from there, it was easily, you know, again, monetized and sanitized. And so it's sort of in the form that you can get it in Cyberpunk, the game that came out recently. Again, haven't played it because it's broken as shit. We'll get around to it at some point. But, you know, fans of that game that before it was coming out are basically obsessed and stanning, you know, a company, a corporation. That's the least cyberpunk thing that you could do in your life is give yourself over or be excited about what a company is producing. And within something like Blade Runner, I think Blade Runner is quite a hopeful film, really, is what it is about. Now, again, you can talk about which cut it is, but I think all of them have that. The whole point of it is that people have basically lost their humanity in this world, but Deckard's arc, whether he is a replicant or not replicant, is all about finding his humanity. Now, I'm of the mind that he's a replicant and he's actually got Gaff's memories, who's the older replicant that you see in the corner. I think that's the thing that makes the most amount of sense. But, you know, that's sort of central to a lot of Philip K. Dick's work, is like, what is it to be human? And even though he wrote a lot of dystopian stuff, it's always got that hope in it about you can find it even if you're not human. Some of the most inhuman things in his work have the most human emotions. And the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, is much, much better. Now, I do like Blade Runner as a film, and I think it does a good way to pick up on things. But it's almost got, and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, it's almost got the antidote for what we need now, because people are hooked up to machines that cause them to have empathy. And empathy is seen as one of the most important things in their society, because that's what was being lost in the past. And so they then fetishize it. And that's like a huge part of the novel. And you see that in the film as well. So, and a big aspect, that's why it's an important film as well, because it is really about, like, yeah, the world is fucked. And we're in the sort of like weird future where, you know, you have to go to the planets. If you're rich, you're going to get away with it. If you're stuck on Earth, it's horrible. There's been a nuclear war. But yeah, like, if you've got your humanity, then you're sort of laughing.
True. I suppose something else we didn't mention was the whole kind of Matrix phenomenon of 99 through to 2003, and how for very long, and you still have people, the odd person who's obsessed with the idea of life being kind of a simulation, all while wearing quite a large amount of leather. Again, we could talk about so many different types of sci-fi. I think probably would be best to kind of, I suppose, not finish up the podcast, but get towards the end of it, is what do you guys think was the best sci-fi for, you know, in terms of what you've read or watched that kind of presented a realistic kind of vision of the future that was actually somewhat hopeful? I'll start, actually, because I think that something along the lines of, actually a bit like, you know, we were saying it earlier, but maybe something along the lines of a dystopian, what's it called, Children of Men, or indeed, you mentioned Blade Runner being optimistic. I do think you're right that the reason why we're kind of drawn to these darker stories is because they do make more sense logically from where we are now to where we're going. But I do think there's always that part of being human that we want to see, if not a happy ending, like a chink of light, that we know there's elements of dark nature of humans, but there's always that kind of, you know, empathy does exist in some people, you know, rationality and kind of hoping to try and make a better society is there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this podcast, and there wouldn't be probably hundreds of other podcasts and journals and whatever else saying the same thing. It's there. You know, that nature, that kind of positive part of human nature is there. And science fiction does, I think, in its best, provide that. So I think my choice would probably be Arrival. And Arrival came out, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. It's about first contact with an alien race that, and their language is actually, or as you learn it anyway, it reveals that time isn't linear. It's actually effectively stacked on top of it. Everything is happening at the same time. And so as the main character learns the language, she basically starts experiencing her whole life at the same time. And it's about grief. And so at the beginning of the movie, you learn a character close to the main character dies, and you only learn at the end where exactly that works out in her timeline and how she deals with that. So she, by the end of the movie, without revealing too much, she's been able to deal with grief by seeing her life as one continuous, continuous kind of experience. So yeah, I don't know if I explained that as best as I could, but I think at its best, science fiction can help us deal with the horrors of the world while presenting us with realistic, I hope at its best, realistic ways of making the world better, even if in small ways, you know. Dan, what about you? What science fiction kind of gives you hope, or do you think presents the world in a way that gives you hope?
Quite similar to Arrival, really. I did watch Arrival, and I felt it touched on very similar themes to Contact, which is one of my favourite sci-fi films. Apart from the very ending, which I won't give away if you haven't seen it, but yeah, it's a similar thing. It's about reaching out into the universe, communicating with a potential higher life form, maybe, them reaching out to us and, you know, giving us plans to make better contact with them, the effects that has on society as a whole. And in general, it's a very optimistic film, I find, even though it kind of pulls the rug under from you a bit at the end and you're kind of left unsure as to whether a major plot point happens or not. But in general, I think because it was written by Carl Sagan and his interest in space and his knowledge of sort of space really comes through in that film, and his love for humanity as well. I watched that film and it makes me feel optimistic for a future and potential contact with other life if that was to ever happen, and that we could react to it in a sort of mature and sensible way. Whether we would or not is a different matter, but yeah. Or the books, the Ringworld books by a guy called Larry Niven, and it's a similar sort of thing. It's set further in the future where a lot of the problems of Earth have kind of been resolved, or they're not alluded to in the book, so you kind of presume they've been resolved. And, you know, there's sort of contact with alien races. There's been war with alien race, and that's resolved. And a guy just basically, they find a giant Ringworld structure in space, sort of like a mini Dyson sphere type thing. And he's sent off to explore it and kind of what that sort of reveals about his own humanity and human race as a whole. So I always think the best sci-fi stuff, as James was saying about Blade Runner, that kind of reflects humanity back on the reader and kind of tries to highlight the best aspects of humanity.
James, what about you? What sci-fi kind of gives you hope, or at least presents a world which you can reasonably go, do you know what, that's got enough horror in it, but also some optimism?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard one because it is, you know, difficult to think of like good, hopeful sci-fi in a lot of ways. If it hasn't, you know, if it's got like a happy ending, it's usually got some sort of like dramatic tension in it that makes you go, you know what, I probably wouldn't actually want to live through that. So, I mean, I guess it must have to come down to like, you know, like good Star Trek. I'm not saying that the new stuff is bad, I just haven't seen it. But I think what is quite appealing about Star Trek of the 60s and 90s, at least, you know, the first couple of seasons of New Generation, is that sense of like, Oh yeah, well we've kind of solved the world's problems now, and let's just go out into space and see. Let's just be dudes in space and fuck about and see what happens. And there's something quite pure about that. And I mean, you can then start, you know, getting into post-colonial theory in it, and you can start analyzing it in these various sort of political ways, especially, you know, as it progresses, where you start realizing that the, my Star Trek knowledge is not 100%, but as far as I remember, it's like Starfleet is like a military wing, but it's not the government, but it sort of definitely functions as a governmental force and quite a lot of the stuff anyway. And if it's not a governmental force, then it's a fucking rogue nation because it's huge and it's got a lot of power. But yeah, that sort of like, you know, post-racial, post-sex in a lot of ways, post-hunger stuff, it does make you kind of go like, you know what? That sounds good to me. I'd actually get behind that. That gives me something to build towards. Even if it's not possible, then at least you can be like, you know, a world without money that they have in Star Trek. You know, it solves a lot of the issues that you're going to have in society.
I thought for a second there you were going to say Independence Day by Roland Emmerich, which I really hoped you were going to go for, because I had a whole thing built up. But no, all right, that's fine.
I mean, really, my most hopeful film is Mad Max, because that's one, the future that I most imagine that we'll see, because Mad Max never says it's going to be nuclear fallout. It's kind of just like, oh yeah, oil just runs out. And I think I would look quite good in tight leathers like that. And basically, it would be being futuristic Vikings, and as we've said in this podcast many of a time, that's the future that most of us are staring in the face. So
if you're talking about futuristic Vikings, aren't you actually talking about Waterworld?
Look, the less said about Waterworld the better.
We should do an entire episode on Waterworld, because that would be amazing.
Yes, let's that would do Waterworld and Postman, just to really torture ourselves.
Oh, it's a different thing altogether. I think Waterworld, if you watch it, you know, it's not, watch it now. Like, if it came out now, you'd be like, you know what, it's not so bad. It's just that movies in general.
Actually, like, the Postman, I guess, is kind of a hopeful film, because this whole thing is about getting the postal service back up and running, which is like this idea in this post-apocalyptic world that there will be some sort of, like, the idea that someone will bring you post, the idea that there'll be this governmental or thing that should be run by the government is up back and running again, is that the sort of the hope there? And now, basically, the irony is that fucking, that is a hopeful film in comparison to the postal service that we've got in most countries now, where you would actually go, it probably runs better on horses there than it does with, you know, the way it's been solved off in the UK.
And Waterworld tells us the hopeful truth that Kevin Costner will one day grow gills and disappear off into the Pacific Ocean, which would be great.
Well, as Dennis Penn said, I like a man that takes the piss out of himself and then puts it back in again.
There you go. Dan, do you want to have the last word about with your world? Do you want to have the last word with your tramadol fucking nightmare?
I don't know if I have much more to contribute, to be honest.
Well, this
you're fucking dick level, like, gone in this now. You're the Scanner Darkly character that's just lost their memory from drug abuse
completely. It's good, like I said, it's good for the pain, bad for the brain.
So that's been our take on science fiction, take it or leave it. If you'd like to learn more, I'm sure I've posted some type of links at the bottom of the episode. I'll probably mine some from James in a couple of weeks. But that's going to be us. We don't know what we're going to talk about next, because we never do. We'll decide when we decide. But if you'd like to kind of join the group, maybe Dan will be so comatose from tramadol next time. You can't make it. If you'd like to fill his his shoes, his Tramadol lace shoes. You can contact us via Facebook. You can contact us via Twitter. You can email us at anarchistreadings@gmail.com. But that's been us. It's goodbye from me. I have been Joss Whedon, Touch My Firefly. Goodbye from Dan, otherwise known as Starship Poopers.
Live long and prosper.
And goodbye from RoboQueef, James.
Time to die.
Very good. And I will not buy that for a dollar.